And here we are once again, Reflections in the Dark, here on Firefall Talk Radio, broadcasting live from the Firefall Studio. Reflections in the Dark, the home of SRT, the Supernatural Response Team. Our motto, Ephesians 5:11, take no part in the worthless deeds of evil and darkness, instead expose them. And since 2007 we have, so consider them exposed. We've been here on Reflections in the Dark since May of 2010, so we are officially 7 years old, which means we're in second grade, which we're going to act like we're in second grade. Wednesday night, 7 p.m. is the porch. If you want to support, don't. They can't hear you laughing, sit your own, so behave. Only I can hear you laughing. Behave yourself. I'll put you out in the hallway in your desk. That's not fair. I'm going to have to put you in so they can hear what you're doing. 7 p.m. this is just wrong, Daddy. Lord, help us, please. 7 p.m. Wednesday nights, the porch. At Firefall Talk and at SRT612 on Twitter. Reminder, if you want to be a part... Almost sneezed on the air. That would have been bad. Microphone would have not been black anymore. Been ugh. If you would like to partner in the documentary, The Deep Darkness, go to thedeepdarkness.com. The website is up. Contact us. If you have any talent, skills, or abilities to help in production or the post-production process, maybe you have a background in promotion or marketing, let us know there as well. We're looking for sponsors and in-kind support. What that means is, if you have a company that supplies a product we could use, then we could use it during the documentary. Of course, you would get promoted for doing so. We're going to reach out to some companies for some equipment, see if they'd like to donate it. And if you want to financially support us, there's ways to do that. Go to supernaturalresponse.net if you want to be a part of our aerial support. Joe, you've been on the air, so they hear you breathing. How you doing, brother?
It's good to be here. I'm very happy. Happy, actually. And, you know, as every time you talk about, you know, 10 years with SRT and everything that we've been doing, even the whole Ephesians 5:11, just everything that we've been doing. And, you know, we always talked about it not paying off so much, you know, in the beginning because we'd get frustrated. But you know what? Everything's going according to plan. It's good. We've revealed a lot of things. We have a lot of good things to look forward to. So it's a good day here with SRT.
Yes,
and a beautiful name. And it's a beautiful day in New England.
Yeah. What is it there? 70s, 80s, 90s? I hear New York's in a heat wave.
Well, believe it or not, we've had almost 90 a few days last week, you know. And right now we're looking at about 75, 80 degrees on an average. But, yeah, we actually even hit the 90s, which is really strange for May in New England. So, yeah. And then the very next day it went down to 63 degrees. So you're going from, like, 90 to 63 in a 24-hour difference. That's kind of strange.
Well, I don't want to say speaking of strange and segueing into who we have with us. That was not intentional. Nathan Zieber is back with us from Alberta. He's going to share some stuff. Nathan's going to be going with us to Kansas in August. Once I get the aerial support list, you'll know who's going to be there and who to pray for and what to pray for. But Nathan has, since he's been on the show last, become a part of MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network.
No.
Right? And yeah. It ties into where we're going to go tonight, which also ties into the teaching I just did in Alabama. So welcome back, Nathan.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Not as warm as it is there, but...
Well, this is, you know, Canada, does it ever get that warm?
You know, southern Canada, but we don't really consider them to be part of Canada.
Or they say y'all. They say y'all in southern Canada.
The cultural blend is enough.
All right. So since you came on the show last, you felt led to get involved with MUFON. What brought that on?
You know, we had a cat mutilation in northern Alberta. Alberta is very much a prairie, mountainous. It's a mixture of both, but it's mostly farmers. So we had a cattle mutilation in northern Alberta. And it was very hard to contact the farmers. The RCMP, which is kind of like our federal police department, got involved. And we noticed MUFON had quite a bit of access. And they also had a database full of UFO sightings and investigators going out to people and talking to them. They also have trained therapists and hypnotherapists that deal with all sorts of stuff. So we wanted to get involved and kind of bring a difference and a light into that area there.
Well, what became of that? I know I sent Nathan a picture and to Joe in regards to ley lines. Where he is in Alberta is at a major, major conjunction, so I'm not surprised. Whatever became of that cattle mutilation, did they just kind of brush it under the carpet?
You know, it's so funny. We had a string of cattle mutilations in the 60s and 70s, and it was so bad that they actually brought in the FBI, which is unheard of, a national and international cooperation between federal law enforcement agencies. And they never really convicted anybody, as was with this case. The RCMP said, well, we don't have the budget to pay for a forensic specialist to take a look at the body, but we're guessing that it ate some sort of poisonous mushroom and its stomach exploded, and we believe the genitals probably are all over the place and flew away from here. And the farmers go, well, there's no blood in the cattle. It's been exsanguinated. The sex organs have been cut out with laser-like precision, right? So there's no tear around them, and the eyes and tongue were missing as well. So that's what they were left with. And yeah, it was pretty strange.
That's ritualistic and definitely fits into every other cattle mutilation that's ever gone on. Well, since you've become involved with MUFON, have you been on any cases? Have you been involved in anything?
Yeah, actually this morning I got a notification that one of my cases was part of MUFON's monthly journal, which is pretty cool. But we've met with abductees over the last few months, and it's so interesting to see how abductees are all generational. There's not one single one of them that isn't abducted generationally. And some of the older ones are seeing their grandkids start talking about these beings that are coming into their room at night and taking them away. And they either fall into two categories. They fall into the category of finding it just absolutely beautiful that these beings are taking them away somewhere, that these beings are going to show up with our cures to all the sicknesses and diseases in the world, and they're going to say, we planted humanity, we're humanity's origin point. But the other half is like, we're going to stop having kids because this is so terrifying. Like, we can't sleep at night. We're on the verge of divorce just because they're being so tormented.
Wow, that's, you know, taken from even just studying UFOs throughout the years and then kind of deviating away from that concept. Because obviously, you know, doing what I do with paranormal research and also with SRT, you kind of forget, or at least I did, you know, you get so engulfed with the spiritual aspects of things that you forget that's going on running parallel to what we do. But why I say this, it's very interesting because I even shared with Richard earlier this week that Sedona, Arizona, where they...
Oh, did I get cut off there?
So, in Sedona, Arizona, Sedona, Arizona, where they have the vortex and all the crystals and everything over there, I decided to give a call to a couple of the stores there where they do the tours and the traveling and stuff like that. And, you know, of course, you do your investigative thing, you poke, you prod, you ask questions. And I said, you know, is it true that they have a tour at nighttime where they go to a certain part of Sedona where they can literally see UFOs flying over, and it's a very common thing to see. And her response to me was, absolutely. She says, we're not part of that tour per se, but there is the tour that does do that. Yes, you can see them. I have seen them. Tourists that come down see them. It's not, isn't this great secret, or you know, you have a very high percentage of seeing them. And then she's going on to say that they're also with various different colors, blue, yellow, and you can just see them flying in the sky, and it's pretty well common. Then I started to realize, okay, so now we're going into the UFO, extraterrestrials, trying to tie everything in together to bring it all in. And I realized that, you know what? There are a lot of cases, situations that are going untold and not talked about. And I'm sure the abductions and the visitations haven't ceased. It's just kind of been covered up and fallen by the wayside, almost like just kind of hidden between all the paranormal stuff with the ghosts and the spirits and all the things that are going on that, you know, you got kind of jog my memory to say, hey, wait a minute, you know what? This still goes on, mm-hmm. and maybe we should visit, you know, revisit that and talk about that again. And then when Richard had talked about doing this show and having you on, it just kind of like, okay, now we're going right back on to where we left off when back we talked about abductions. Back to basics, which I absolutely love, where we originally left off in the first place.
The thing here is, there was a movie called The Fourth Kind. I don't know if you remember it. Mila Jovovich was in it. It was about an abduction, and it tied the whole Sumerian, fallen angel. It tied all that together, and then turned out to be a hoax. It said it was based on real story and found footage, but then the whole thing was a hoax. And I think what happened is it caused people to back away and say, well, I don't want to tell that story. I don't want, you know, my story is like that, but if I say that now, they'll think I'm doing the same thing. And there was somebody I knew, and actually an actress friend of mine who just died recently. She was an abductee. Her mother, her grandmother, almost all the women in her family were. She remembered the first moment that it happened in her teens. Unfortunately, Dr. Greer died before I could get her checked for a chip that probably caused the tumor that caused her to die. And it's a sad story, and I even still have difficulty talking about it. But there's so many people out there that are like her that want to tell a side of the story that they can't. And whether mm-hmm. it's in Alberta or Sedona, and what made me, you reminded me of something, there's actually a campground in the mountains of Sedona that I think you have to pay to stay there. But you can sit there. Not only do you see UFOs, you can watch the orbs come out and play. And I've seen the videos from it. And when the sun goes down and these people are all waiting, and I'm sure they're the ones attracting it, the sky just fills with these orbs that are just flying around the people.
Absolutely. Your thoughts on that, Nathan, as far as with your study and you know, diving deep into various compartments of paranormal research, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's interesting. There's all these different paranormal hotspots in the world. Like you said, Sedona, there's the Brownville Mountain Lights in South Carolina. There's Shasta Mountain. And these are places that aren't just UFO sighting rich, but there's all sorts of other cryptozoological creatures, there's shadows, there's all sorts of stuff that are seen around the same time. And it's almost like there's a thin point between the veil where these things are coming in and out of. There's all sorts of encounters. People are abducted from campgrounds and national parks near those areas. And yeah, as far as like implants and stuff, all of these people we've met with have different places where they know the implant is, and there's like a little abnormal bump, and they said it moves, right? Which is what we've seen before also. So it seems to be getting more and more popular, but like you said, it's being swept under the limelight, it's being kept hush-hush, and there's actually psychological conditions. Now, I say that in quotations because it's like they're trying to explain it away by saying, oh, these people are just having hallucinations, and that's how we're going to explain it away, right? Because there's no other explanation for what's happening to them.
Yeah, except we come at it differently, and that's why, you know, it's the great idea of the deep darkness is there's so many different stories we could tell, and I'd love to be able to tell that one from our perspective. And I'm jumping around in my notes here. I was going to do this at the end, but it ties into it now. You know, the whole UFO thing, first recorded story of an abduction was in 1947, but all of this ties back to three people: Aleister Crowley, Jack Parsons, and L. Ron Hubbard. And I'll tell you how I got here. I'm kind of backing into the story, and we can discuss it. Recently, I taught a teaching called The Deep Darkness in Alabama, where I talked about the universe from a biblical, God-centered, Jesus-centered perspective. And in science, just suddenly finding out all the things that we talk about here on Reflections in the Dark. The latest one is of possible proof of a parallel universe. And basically, this is something that was discovered in 2004, confirmed 2013, NASA spotted a cold spot, colder than normal in its surroundings, about 1.8 million light years across. And initially they called it an empty super void. But now researchers in Durham University believe it's the first evidence of a multiverse. And they're setting out to prove that this cold spot is actually the collision point between two universes at the beginning of time. Now, I don't have time to go into it, but it kind of fits into some of the theories I'm working on about the gap of Genesis 1:1 and 1:2. Be that as it may, scientists are now looking for these alternate dimensions that we would say, well, there's this world, there's paradise, there's the outer darkness, there's the pit. I mean, these are all various places that we believed to be real, and they could fit into that. But they're looking at it from the purely scientific. They don't even want to talk creation. But the guy who wrote it, Professor Tom Shanks in Durham, said, "We can't entirely rule out that the spot is caused by an unlikely fluctuation explained by the theory of the Big Bang. But if there isn't an answer, then there's a more exotic explanation, the most exciting of which is that a collision between our universe and another bubble universe proves that this is the first evidence of a multiverse." Now, with the resurgence in UFO activity, what Nathan's finding about abductees, they're out there, but now they don't want to talk about it because they don't want to be stigmatized and marked by it. And everything that we're discovering from what we do with SRT, it just seems to me that we're coming towards some kind of supernatural, paranormal, I'll call it a singularity, to take Kurzweil's word, that something's getting ready to happen, to reveal itself, and that's what we're in the middle of.
Absolutely, I see that. And, you know, it's funny because, as we talked about science and how that always went contrary to, say, the spiritual aspect of things, or at least that's where it was headed, we've always believed they tied in together and they were one and the same in a lot of ways, especially when we're dealing with, you know, extraterrestrials and spirits. And, you know, you've got the scientific terminology of what it is, and then you can do the paranormal things. You know, we can say spirits, we can talk about energy, you know what I'm saying? We can say ghosts, we go souls, and then you get the parallel universes, and then you have the UFOs, but then you also have these orb-looking things that can be of color. So you start to really realize that, and then we talk about different universes, but we can talk about various dimensions. So right. You say, at this point, are we finally coming to a dead end, you know, in the road here, where we're backed up in a corner to say, hey, you know something, maybe we should consider the possibility that everything is one and the same, maybe just termed differently and varied off from different belief systems, but are we all talking about the same things? You're talking, you know, extraterrestrials, and I'm talking angelic beings. Are we talking the same thing, or we're talking different, or should we finally come to a crossroads where we should consider that maybe the Bible was telling the truth originally and was giving us signs and messages from the get-go as to what was happening even then?
Well, I think we should, and Nathan, you're going to have to jump in here because Joe and I would just talk forever. That's the concept behind the deep darkness. What you just said is to take everything, spirituality, religion, science, history, archaeology, all of these things, and tie them together and say, hey, it's always been one answer. And the answer has always been there. And that one answer, biblically, is all of this. I mean, when you look at that, and I don't know what you're allowed to do or what not to do when you go on these investigations. Has anybody ever seen to see if these areas of implants give off any signature, any electronic signature at all?
Yeah, and just to back it up for a minute, I completely agree with you guys, but I think the deception is there that they're interdimensional beings, quote unquote, right, in order to get to work with governments and stuff like that around the world and to trade technology for abductees and different things like that. But yeah, some of these people have gone to, as you know, we have like free medical health care. They've gone to radiology departments to get the implants tested, and they're giving off a electromagnetic pulse. Or a frequency rather. They're giving off radio signals. They're doing all sorts of things that can't even be measured with our current equipment. And then they go back later to get it tested again, and it's moved to a different part of their body, and they're not sure where it is, right? So that's one thing we're trying to work on with them next, to go to the ones that are just absolutely terrified and not wanting any more contact with these things, is to offer hope and say, you know what, let's try and go get these things removed. And yeah, go from there.
Do you pinpoint on a map where these people live to see if that there's a specific geographic locality for these abductees?
Yeah, it's tough with the MUFON reporting system. It's typically like one person will step out of their comfort zone and reach out and hope nobody considers them crazy. And then they know of other people. There's kind of like these support groups, right, mm-hmm. where they're being abducted and they don't know how to explain it. So once you get through to one person, you kind of have a whole network of other people they've joined up with. And we've seen that in shows before. And it's really weird because a lot of these people have no concept or paradigm for the supernatural. But when they experience these things, the only words they could describe it with is deeply supernatural or deeply demonic or deeply benevolent, right? They don't know any other way to describe what should be a mysterious phenomenon to them.
And that's what I wanted to say, too. And I'm sorry to interrupt, but on this one, that's what I wanted to say. It's all well and good if you go into a haunted house, say, or, you know, alleged haunted house, go in there and see something and you get that tangible proof. You have that feel good and you're like, wow, this is great. This is nothing like how I expected. This is beautiful. Same thing to see what you know, a craft in the sky that is a UFO, and have that experience. But as soon as it all goes bad, as soon as that haunting gets dark, as soon as you're realizing that the beings you think you're talking to aren't necessarily good, the first thing you want to do is cling to God or cling to say that, yeah, that is evil in nature. That must have been demonic. And I say to myself, why didn't you already think that or know that before? Did it take that haunting or that situation to be so dark and scary to have you crawling saying, okay, it is evil, I believe that now? So that's my only problem, Richard. Do you know what I'm saying? It's almost everything is all well and good until it rears its ugly head. Now you could say it's demonic.
Think about your experience of paranormal TV and my opinion of it, is that they're not going to tell the truth because they don't want to frighten people and they don't want to go down that road. And there have been other people that have tried to tell the truth. Either the quality has been awful or their work has been shoddy. I mean, again, this sounds like a pitch. It gets back to what we want to do and what we wanted to do the whole time, is to do what we do, confront these things, but then reveal the evidence in such a way that there's no more excuses. Your position is your position by choice, not based on fact. And, you know, Nathan, when you were talking about these people, it just, of course, as if Kansas isn't dangerous enough, is to go, okay, let's go to these places. Let's confront these things. Let's find a way to show the world what they are. I mean, one of the things I've always wanted to do is go to Skinwalker Ranch, even though I know they won't let us on there, or some of these other places where this stuff happens, and nobody just goes out there, draws the line in the sand, and says, hey, let's see whose God is God. But that's what it's going to take. It's going to take unmasking them, getting them to reveal who they really are, and that would be really difficult because they're good at being deceptive. But when confronted in the way that we confront them, which almost always makes them come out and play and makes them show themselves, until people see that for what it is, they're not going to get it. They're just not.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. We dealt with a guy a few weeks ago who had a coworker who was murdered, and he was convinced she was haunting him, right? He was getting phone calls from her and all sorts of stuff. And we went and met with him, and we said, like, no, you're not being haunted by a ghost. This is demonic. You're being tormented. And he had gone to several psychics before us and paid hundreds of dollars for their help. And of course, nothing happened, right? But we went with him and said, you know what, this has got to change. Like, you've got to, he claimed he was Christian. We were very firm with him that that's not the type of Christian response that will help or that any Christian should take. But it was difficult to confront him when he was just so entrenched in his belief systems.
Yeah, you can't convince them of anything. One thing we've learned after all these years, 10 years of SRT, and I've been doing this since 88, is that you can pick up the signals right away when they're going to receive what you have to say, and sometimes you just have to move on. But the other reason I want to talk about this, and it ties into what we're talking about, at the same time NASA found this alternate possible universe, they have found this human artificial barrier around the Earth. Basically what they're saying is they have been investigating the Van Allen belt, which protects us from radiation. They have found this very low frequency signal that we supposedly created to communicate with deep ocean submarines. I don't believe that at all. I believe they were being used for controlling people. But those signals are bouncing off the Earth, hitting the ionosphere and staying there. And they have created this bubble around the Earth that has expanded the Van Allen belt. It's a barrier, so to speak. And what's interesting is that the Van Allen belt, the inner limit of it, first, you know, really discovered in the 60s, used to be much closer to the Earth. And now these VLF, very low frequencies, have expanded it. So this triggered some talks that we did years ago in the show and research that I had done, is that just so nobody, if nobody understands, VLF, very low frequencies, are anything between 1 and 20 kilohertz. Anything between 1 and 9 is unlicensed, meaning you don't have to get an FCC license, and considered natural. Nikola Tesla, one of the most brilliant men in the world, believed that this signal, these VLF signals that were natural, were actually from the spirit world. Now, you can think what you want about Tesla. I've done enough research on him to know, yes, he was ungodly. He did not believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He did believe in the spirit world and many things like that. But on this particular topic, when he discovered these waves, what he did was he said in a 1901 article called Talking with the Planets, because he believed that he was communicating with beings on Mars, my first observations positively terrified me, as there was present in them something mysterious, not to say supernatural, and I was alone in my laboratory at night. Basically, he was receiving communications from the void of space, somewhere Mars, Venus, somewhere in there, and he began to make note of it. Now, he wasn't the only one. There were many other scientists, including Marconi, who believed the same thing. What he found out was that these signals not only had a pattern, but seemed to be responding to his communication with him. Again, regardless of what you think about Tesla, one of the most brilliant men of all time, he harnessed the forces of Niagara Falls to create electricity. He's the one who actually created the light bulb, not Edison. Edison could never get it right. Once Tesla died and Edison got his paperwork from the FBI, he suddenly invents the vacuum tube light bulb. He's the father of Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, but not credited for it. He figured out how to use the Earth as a wireless transmitter. He was also going to use the Earth as a wireless electrical transformer to give free electricity, which is really fascinating when you realize why he was doing it. He believed that the pyramids and structures like it were created by intelligent beings to be energy transformers, something I've been saying for years. I didn't realize Tesla said it, but what he believed is that the ether exists and that there are particles in the ether that keep the universe in harmony, black holes, things like that. He had an experience that I think I shared with Joe and with my son Chris, was he basically accidentally electrocuted himself. Like 1 million volts went through him. And he didn't die. But what happened, what he said was that during that moment, he felt like he was outside of time. That he saw the past, the present, and the future simultaneously, and that's when he came back with some of these theories. If you've seen the movie Iron Man, where he pulls up his inventions into the air on some kind of a virtual reality screen and begins to move them, that was from writings of Tesla on how he saw his inventions in his head. But he actually created something called the Tesla Spirit Radio, which could grab these very low frequencies out of the air, could like lightning and things like that, and all of the things that we talk about, and suddenly this is back in the news again. All of this is suddenly, like I said, converging. We're talking about very low frequencies that he believed were the spirit realm. Other people are saying it's just the natural microwave radiation of the universe or of the Earth or whatever. And Tesla, at the end of his life, felt very clearly, and this is in the 1920, that he said he expressed great concerns that these beings from other planets were malevolent and had unsavory designs for planet Earth.
Well, let me ask you this question, and you know, this goes to you, Nathan, actually. So, obviously, you know, we're all on the same page. We're all spirit-filled believers. I know all that. But let me ask you this question. Do you ever get blindsided in your research, especially when you're dealing with, you know, UFOs and MUFON and extraterrestrials and stuff like that? Do you ever contemplate or doubt and say to yourself, is there life out there? Is that what's happening? Do sometimes that waver your thoughts as to, are they one and the same? Are they separate? Or does this just verify even more that it is all connected to the one thing and spiritually and as we know it, in demonic in nature? Is where has your research taken you to lead you to where you are now? Do you have a solid grip on it, or has this, you know, the MUFON and everything that's going on and people's allegations of seeing these large crafts and these metallic discs, does it bring you even closer to the truth, or do you have even more questions than answers at this point?
Oh, every time we feel like we find an answer, we have 10 more questions. Sometimes it feels like we're taking steps backwards, because I have an interest in the physics field as well. And when you start getting into Einstein's theory of quantum entanglement and how energy doesn't actually disperse, it just collects and reforms somewhere else. And when I read about Nikola Tesla's spirit box and all these other things, it really shakes you a bit. I do believe that there are some things we won't know until we cross to the other side, that there's some things we don't even know what we don't know, right? And then there's the human aspect of things too, right? Where some of these people see men in black, right, with the alien creatures, with stuff like that, which goes towards the concluding of aliens, quote unquote, and governments. And then there's the possibility, well, is this back engineered by some human department, that it's just strictly human? There's all sorts of questions we have, even when it comes to ghosts. It's like I don't believe in ghosts as in wandering spirits per se, but there are times in the Bible where it seems like somebody's spirit is present in a physical way, but not in a tangible manifestation, right? Which is the literal definition of a ghost. So how do you deal with stuff like that, right? There's a ton of questions, but I'm so thankful that I'm able to rely on the spirit, that I'm able to rely on the word and to go from there. There was a radio broadcast from the 90s, I think, or early 2000s, where a guy called in to radio station Art Bell was on. And you guys may have heard
coast
this, but he claims,
right,
yeah, he claims he's a Area 51 employee, and he sounds quite panicked. And he's talking about how the aliens aren't what they appear to be, how they're interdimensional beings that want to see the destruction of humankind. And then all of a sudden, his radio station gets knocked off the air completely once this guy starts talking about it. And it's super bizarre, because that hasn't happened to him before. He had some guy call back a number of weeks later who said, yeah, that was me, I made the whole thing up. And Art Bell's like, well, how did you knock my radio station off the air? And the guy didn't know. And so there's all sorts of things that really shake, but not in a foundational way.
But, you know,
I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. But, Tesla always believed the signals he were getting, he was communicating with Mars, like I said. But the complete quote from the 20s, I couldn't find my notes. He began to get the strange sense that they were not coming from Mars. Here's the direct quote. The signals are too strong to have traveled great distances from Mars to Earth, wrote Tesla. So I am forced to admit to myself that the sources must come from somewhere in the nearby space or even the moon. I am certain, however, that the creatures that communicate with each other every night are not from Mars, probably from another planet in our solar system. Which ties into exactly where we started the show. And he wasn't the only one, like I said. Guillermo Marconi also created some kind of radio transmitter, was doing the same thing. So I looked at that date by 1920 and it triggered a thought. Is there anything that preceded 1920 that could have caused this? Well, in January, from January to March of 1918, Aleister Crowley began a series of magical workings called the Amalantra workings in furnished rooms in Central Park West in New York City. Through sexual magic rituals, he deliberately created a portal, a rift in our dimension, from which he claims, and he drew the entity called Lamb, L-A-M, appeared to him. Lamb, of course, if you look him up, looks like all the alien grays, and he considered Lamb to be interdimensional, not extraterrestrial. So nobody sees a picture of Lamb until 1919 at an exhibit called Dead Souls in Greenwich Village, all right? So that's 1920, Tesla begins to think that these things are bad. So we tie those two things together. Then how do we tie together where we are now with the UFOs? Well, in 1946, L. Ron Hubbard and Jack Parsons, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory founder and rocket fuel scientist, did a similar ritual. Where'd the name of it go? It just went away. The Amalantra. No, that's Crowley. Theirs had a different name, and it's not my notes at the moment. But basically, they were trying to replicate what Crowley did and rip open another rip, but to specifically bring through the Whore of Babylon. what they were trying to do was to take the spirit of Babylon, the whore of Babylon, and put it into a human womb so that the child would be born, and they considered it a good thing. Crowley's quote about them is, apparently Parsons and Hubbard were somebody who's producing a moon child. I get fairly frantic when I contemplate the idiocy of these louts, because he did not like the fact that Crowley closed his rift. L. Ron Hubbard and Parsons did not. Is there anything that ties all of this together with what we're talking about right now? Yes, the first UFO, the UFO era began on June 24th, 1947, with Kenneth Arnold's sightings over Cascade Mountains in Washington State. And then, of course, we know about Roswell in the following month. Even John Keel, the author and the researcher about the Mothman, the character that we will hunt down, he believes that all of what he dealt with and what we're talking about is occult activity of some sort. So we see a pattern here. I think we do. Maybe I'm just, you know, connecting dots that don't connect. But when we look at timelines and you begin to say, is there anything that ties together? Aleister Crowley does what he does. All of a sudden, Tesla and Marconi are communicating with something that Tesla suddenly believes is malevolent, the same as Jacques Vallée, who was one of the original researchers in the UFO thing, who now is very adamant that these things are malevolent. And we get to where we are now, and suddenly we're seeing all of it happening simultaneously as we believe we're getting closer to the end.
I totally agree with that. And it is, as we're coming closer to the end. And here's another question that we can talk about. So we have various dimensions that people, you know, scientists believe that there are multiple dimensions. I know Rich and I, we had a conversation earlier this week about being outside of time and being able to detect, say, past, present, and future, which is God, because there's no time constraints on him. My whole thought at this point is, if we are dealing with demonic in nature, is there any plausible reason for somebody to believe that in one dimension resides the angelics in the heavenly realms, and then there's the parallel universe that also has what resides in there? So I guess what I'm trying to say is, you take the whole apparitions and the ghosts, okay? Let's talk about that. Now, we all know them to be demonic in nature, okay? When we go to these places and we do our research, this is what we conclude, and we have various proof that supports those things. If you're taking it from the scientific aspect of a parallel universe, and you're getting snippets of what has taken place or is taking place concurrently in another reality, then do scientists debunk the hauntings for just being a whole other world that's running parallel to us, but we're just getting a glimpse of it through what we can see or what is spilling over from that parallel universe? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but they can't debunk it. What they can do is offer an alternative answer. See, and that's where, gotcha, at least where I'm coming from. They can say, well, I can debunk it and say this is this. And my response is no. What you're offering is an alternative answer that I can tie together with what I believe, which is what I do in these seminars and what I do, what we try to do here on the show. I don't know if people always get what we have to say. But when we look at this, if we look at the fact, and this goes into what I taught in Alabama, time, in my opinion, is just for us. If you look at the creation pattern in Genesis, I believe that everything from Genesis 1-2 on, I believe theologically, and I can prove it through some of what I have, that there's a gap between Genesis 1-1 and 1-2. There's enough good teachers out there that have taught on it. I get the heresy hunters. Well, it's not in there. But yeah, it is. You just got to go look for it. But if we take 1-2 on to the creation of man, I don't believe man was an afterthought. I believe that everything that happened in Genesis was to set up the creation of man, to give him a universe to exist in. That's just my opinion. Now, if we look at that, and we look at the fact that he was placed into the garden, which I don't believe is in this reality, and then kicked out of it so that he would not live forever in that sinful position, then time is just for us. 24 hours a day, the seasons, the rotation of the planets. You know, Tesla was the first person to figure out that if you take the solar system and look at it from, you know, you flip it sideways and you see the planets as they revolve around the sun, that it matches exactly the rotation of neutrons and protons in the rotation of the atom. And it does. When you look at the image, just like I did, you know, in that teaching of tying the structure of the brain to the structure of the universe, there's a divine design here that we were created to exist in, but time was only for us. They don't measure everything in space by the time. They do it by light years, how long light takes to get to you. What they're saying there is that this is different parameters for time in space, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I completely agree with both of you. I mean, you have portions of the Bible where the authors are trying to describe something beyond their understanding, like when Daniel talks about...
They should have no understanding of absolute...
Yeah, like Daniel talks about the different heavens, right? And I think heavens is another word for dimensions, right? Where the demons, the fallen angels fought the angels for 7 days before they could get a message to Daniel, right? And I believe that was... another dimension where they were crossing through.
Right.
And even with the old earth, like there's this wonderful theologian called Arthur C. Kunstance, who's a Scottish theologian who wrote a book called Without Form and Void, and it's the gap theory. It's what I fall under too, but just the what happened between those two verses. And even our understanding of radio frequencies, I think we're still at an infantile stage of understanding radio frequencies and how they work and how prayer ties into moving things and different things like that, because everything seems to have a radio frequency. We're all vibrating on a molecular level, and you have stuff like the black-eyed children who are being seen everywhere, where they're producing a specific radio frequency,
right?
and all sorts of crazy things involving frequencies too. But yeah, I'm fully on board with both of what you're saying.
Well, if we look at that and we see everything that's going on, we know the majority of the church either A, would have tuned out about now, would have tried to tar and feather us, or would just not have agreed with us. But all of this is being revealed. I believe it's all in the Bible. I do it, you know, I tie it together, whether it's in the writings or in the teachings I do of where I see these things. That gap theory, I didn't know about that guy. I'm going to look him up. Arthur Pink, G.H. Pember. Dr. Missler, all these guys explain it in such a way that if you look at the language, and matter of fact, the gap theory was believed by most theologians until like the 1800s when we became eggheads, when the mind
literalists
became more important than accepting what was written there. But when we look at what's going on with the UFOs, with the orbs, with the cattle mutilations, with all of the activity that we talk about happens in specific areas, I believe there's a reason for that that goes back to Genesis 1:1 and 1:2. If he reformed that earth and the rocks in those areas are from that destroyed earth and they have an imprint on them that allows this to happen. I probably just lost most everybody. But anyway, I believe there's a way to prove that, is to go there and show the signature here doesn't match. It doesn't make sense, which is kind of what, you know, Tesla was heading towards before the powers that be found out, hey, all this free energy he's pulling out of the air, he wants to send directly into the earth and give it to everybody for free. J.P. Morgan Chase pulled the money. Tesla mysteriously dies. All of his files get taken by the FBI. And like I said, suddenly Edison can finally do the light bulb and all these other things. And speaking of which, on a whole SRT level, he had his lab in Colorado Springs. I don't know where that was. But there's actually an area on Long Island I would love to visit called Shoreham, Long Island, where he had that tower, 187 feet tall, Wardenclyffe Tower, that was the original example of the power plant that he would create that would energize the earth. The facility is still there. The land that this tower sat on is still there. And I just have this thought as I watched it on a Netflix documentary. I wonder what kind of paranormal activity goes on there, and did he establish an energy point there? But all of these energy points are all over, we believe, all over the world. People are still being abducted, even though nobody wants to talk about it. We do what we do, and we get the evidence we do. We're seeing orbs on a level and a size that most people don't gather that kind of evidence. And even though these UFOs give off a radar signature, I've always wondered, are these things actual ships, or are they just massive orbs? See, we learned in New Britain that when we confronted Baal Berith, all of the other spirits had been absorbed into the orb that he was in. You remember that, Joe?
Absolutely.
So here you have him in the center. Now, we have pictures of him where it's just his face. He, again, was in McCullough. And then we have, as he leaves New Britain, the orb has expanded in size, and all the other spirits are inside this one orb with him. So you begin to wonder, now I'm just thinking out loud here, and if we go over it, it's fine. The bigger the entity, the bigger the power, the bigger the orb. Now, what if these giant UFOs that we see in the sky are actually just a giant orb filled with all these demonic spirits, some bigger and stronger than others? Wouldn't that make it a form of a ship?
Well, I mean, if you look at it, if you take it in that direction, okay, or at least bring up the questions and the possibilities of that happening, or you know, having any validity, then you can say that when Ezekiel saw the wheel, he saw multiple wheels. He had colors, and he described the, you know, color of amber, which goes back to what we were talking about in Sedona, of people seeing these different colored orbs, various patterns following one another. Then if we can take with what we have viewed on a scientific level by some of the orbs that we've captured, whether I had done it at the Sally House or we had done it together with SRT in Alabama, then you can look at multiple faces, right, inside that one big orb. So if you, as Nathan was saying, how they describe things, they can only describe things back in biblical times of how they could explain it, because they didn't have the verbiage and the scientific knowledge to understand a lot or say it the way that they wanted to get it out. So that is a good possibility, or at least something that leaves room for thought, food for thought, that if we can capture an orb with multiple faces in it, then why can't a larger orb appear of color with those same type of faces? And that would be misinterpreted, right, as a misunderstood as, say, a ship or a vessel of some sort.
It'd be easy to do that. And, you know, Ezekiel's wheel in a wheel, I've thought for a very long time, was a wormhole between the throne room and where we are now. I did not know that Tesla believed that these portals, he believed in portals, he believed that they were wormholes in time and space. So all of this information is somewhere there. It's a matter of tying it all together. But the one thing I'd love to be able to do, and maybe Kansas is the way to do it, and if there's anybody out there that has the scientific ability, I would love to see if these orbs that we capture, which are pretty substantial, give off a radar signature. We pick them up on camera. We pick them up on audio. There have been times that they pick them up with heat signatures because they don't match the rest of the area. I wonder if there's a way to figure out, do these things give off a radar signature? Are they picked up, you know, with some kind of, I don't know how we would do it in a small space, but if we could prove that yes, they appear on a radar screen as a blip, as sending back the information, then that would prove that these UFOs are orbs, or at least offer the argument that they could be.
They give off radiation too. Part of our MUFON training is to have a radiation detector with us, and usually the bigger, I was going to say, orbs give off radiation too in the UFO sense, where part of our training is to take a radiation kit with us if we have one, and the larger the UFO or orb, the more radiation it's going to give off, which can lead to symptoms like the tops of trees being completely black, being charred from where it was hovering, and it might be a mixture of both. Some might be full orb energy circles. Some might be a physical structure after a certain point. Like, it's, yeah.
You know, you just reminded me of a UFO documentary I watched that talked about that, which ties into another theory I'd like to be able to prove, is the physical damage that we have suffered from doing what we do for all these years to being in the presence of that kind of radiation. I believe, even though my thyroid issues are hereditary, I believe some of what we've suffered, just like if you're near a smart meter and you're bathed in that or Wi-Fi for long periods of time, it does damage to you on a cellular structure. I'm wondering, from going to the places we do and confronting the things we confront, have our bodies absorbed some of that radiation? There's got to be a device, and folks, you're just listening in on an SRT team meeting. There's got to be a device. There's got to be a device that we could wear that was small enough to record what we're dealing with at that moment. Because I believe, and this isn't to exalt me, this is just, I'm the point guy. I'm the guy that stands nose-to-nose with these things. And Joe's taking the pictures. There's got to be a physical response to doing what I do, standing in front of something that's thousands, you know, maybe tens of thousands or millions of years old, and through the power of the Lord, defeating it and pushing it off the property. What's happening to my body at that moment? Joe and I, we've talked about this.
Well, that's very interesting, and you're right. I mean, as far as the radiation and what we're exposed to, I mean, we have EMF detectors that we take with us. So to look at an orb and see multiple faces in it, sure, are these little portals that are opening up? There are so many possibilities. I think the one in, was it Groton, New Hampshire, where you blew that up, Richard, and you added some depth as far as...
Right, we saw the face coming through.
But, I mean, come on. I mean,
go to McCullough, which is one of the ones I showed in Alabama, the ones over Jesse's head. Those two orbs that popped up over his head, there are literally two faces with egg-shaped eyes, the typical alien grays coming through those.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the mouth, it looked like a reptile. It did. I remember.
There's a nose, there's eyes, there's shape to the head, and it looks like it has popped a hole in both. Jesse and Larry said when they walked through that area, it was like they went through these spider webs, but there was nothing there. They felt an audible, tangible physical change, and all of a sudden, Barith is above to the right, and there's all of them, but then those two have popped completely through with a massive energy ring. That's got to give a signature beyond what we've shown so far.
Absolutely. And then we can't also forget the other picture that was when I was walking on my backside, that there was this streak of light.
Right.
Or remember that one that was actually
right.
making contact
right.
with my shoulder. So, no, we were definitely subjected to definitely radiation and some sort of frequency that was going on enough to bring these faces out that were over Jesse. And enough in that picture to actually make contact with the body. So whether it's coming through or how it's coming through scientifically, it is making contact. So I do believe, like you said, to answer that question, there is something that we're being subjected to and affected by. It could be a slow process, something that happens gradually throughout the years of doing these cases and being around that true spirit energy, as we talk about, that has those altercations to cause medical things to happen, whether it be whether it be your thyroid or other things that are happening to us, because I just don't. Even anxiety and those things are to me are all subjected to something causing effect to our minds, our brains that are releasing those chemicals. And what kind of enhancement is that doing to us even during the course of a case? So that's why the Sally House, everything that we're going to be doing, what we're going to be trying to do as investigators.
In the middle of a solar eclipse.
Exactly. This is going to be more, for me, for us, is going to be more of scientific research. This isn't going to be Ghostbusters. This is going to be like if we can come back, I think, from the Sally House with a lot of answers to questions that we had and that we probably have already known the answer but just needed verification. I believe we will get that verification and be able to tie in things into much better perspective after spending time there in Atchison of viewing and researching multiple areas, not just one.
Now, Nathan, jump in here, and we are going over, folks. It doesn't matter. We're not bound by the time factor. With what you're doing for MUFON and what you're learning, the possibility now appears to me that the Lord may have led you down that road for everything we're talking about right now. Because the same thing these people suffer, the anxiety, the physical responses, the long-term effects for repeated exposure or abductions is exactly what we're talking about right now, is it not?
Yeah, and it's just to back it up here for a minute, for a long time, MUFON didn't pay attention to orbs, they ignored orbs, but so many people were reporting encounters with orbs that they finally sent out a briefing. This is before I came on board, but the guy who trained me, included me in on it, sent out a briefing to all their field investigators and STAR team that said, okay, this is our explanation for orbs. We have no idea what they are. Some people can interact with them. They appear to be intelligent in some ways. And so even the secular world is noticing these orb-like things. And if we talk about stuff like radiation in the Bible or chariots of fire, I mean, they could be chariots, or maybe they've got such a strong
signature
physical effect on Earth that they're causing like a ball of fire through the air, or when angels are appearing as pure white, and how radiation causes things to turn pure white.
Let's just talk about this. That I've been in the I've been doing this for 28, almost 29 years, confronting the demonic in some serious demonic situation. I never thought about the long term effects because we never thought about it from a natural level. We only saw it from a spiritual level. But whenever I've been in the presence of angelic, holy angels, the sensation has been so overwhelming. When I've been in the presence of that kind of holiness, whether it's the Lord, and folks, you believe what you want. If you don't want to believe, that's fine. I'm good with that. Whether it's the Lord or whether it's the angels that I have been around, it's so overwhelming that my body almost shuts down. That I am conscious, my eyes are open, but you can't stand. And you just overwhelmed by the energy of it, as some people talk about, as my son Chris would tell you, the first time he encountered something purely demonic, that his stomach began to do flip-flops, he became extremely nauseous, and he could barely stand up. It's the effect of the energy, whether you want to call it dark or light or demonic or holy, we are responding to, because we are energy. So that's one of the things Tesla said in his beliefs, which is not godly and not biblical, but he was on to something. We are primarily energy. We are interacting with the universe on that level. So if we look at it from this perspective, and let's talk about Atchison, let's talk about the deep darkness, is that being in that town, in that state, in that town, in that house, while the solar eclipse goes over the top of it, if we don't get a massive amount of evidence, not only will I be disappointed, I will be surprised. Because that kind of an effect is actually what these people are looking for. I found out, remember I told you guys and I've told our listeners, that all the hotels in Atchison are sold out within a 20-mile radius. all across the totality, in all of the major cities that are, some of them are hosting big events, the hotels have been sold out for a year.
Wow.
So now let's take the human energy, what I call the law of attraction, it's not the secret, but the fact that an atom appears to you when you want to see it because your energy pulls it into a visible format. What's the law of attraction going to be across the path of totality from Salem, Oregon to Charleston, South Carolina, with all those people pulling and the solar eclipse creating this massive amount of negative energy? Again, as we've said, this is a once-in-a-lifetime event that we have got to have the right equipment to not just do what we do with this, the orb. That's going to happen. I believe if we thought McCullough was the bombshell of orbs, I think Atchison's going to be even different. The voices, the experiences, the apparitions. But to prove this on a scientific level, to be able to present to people in a feature film format and say, okay, if you don't believe us, then what is this? So that's my little promotion speech, my rant or whatever. And, of course, on top of all that is to deal with certain things that have been tormenting people and hurting people and the ultimate confrontation part of it. But the other side of it is let's just expose the darkness for what it is. Let's do what we talked about at the beginning of the show here. Our theme is consider them exposed. That's what SRT has been doing for 10 years, and that's what this will do. In closing out, Nathan, where do you see your experiences with MUFON going? And do you agree with me that they, without realizing it, they're going to play into what happens in Kansas?
Oh, absolutely. I think we will see an influx of activity of, UFO activity around Kansas and Atchison. And I'm in the process of gathering up reports from Atchison, Kansas area. And the last time there was a solar eclipse as well, because the MUFON database isn't just current, but they take historical reports as well to see just what's been happening there since the last solar eclipse. And going forward, we're going to continue to meet with these people, and they're a shy, scared, tender bunch that I can be very impatient with. But I think they're fed up with going to hypnotherapists. I think they're fed up with going to psychics, and that they're looking for a solution that'll stick, that won't make things worse.
Well, you got to look at them in their woundedness. Forget all the other stuff. Forget the MUFON. Forget the orbs and the demon. What you have to do is, with the eyes of the Lord, look at them and see them in their woundedness. Now, for me, that does two things. It offers me great compassion for them and offers me great anger towards the enemy for having done this. So, which is kind of drives me to do what I do. I was thinking about this today, and again, just thinking out loud. Here I am at this age, after doing this all this time and going into the biggest prize fight of all time for me, you would think that the Lord would choose somebody younger and stronger, but it's the experience that comes with it. But it's the compassion of, and I said this last week or the week before when Joe and I talked about Canada, I'm not going there to do a hit job. This isn't an SRT hit job. These people are wonderful people. They're nice people. They're regular, everyday people that have been living in something that I don't even think they understand, and nobody's explained it to them in an intelligent, compassionate way that they can then decide what they want to do with that. But it isn't just Atchison. It's all over the world. And if we could just shine the light in one story to get people to say, wow, what's really going on here? If they want to invite us and to come there, I have no problems with that. But the point is this, and that's the theme of Reflections in the Dark, is to shine the light into the darkness so that people can decide for themselves what they want to think, what they want to believe, and then what they want to do about it. That's not on us. Just like with you trying to help these people, Nathan, you're there to offer them, hopefully, compassion, hopefully, help, but you can only help the people that want to be helped, like that man you were talking about. There's only so much you can do, and then pray for them. Closing thoughts, Joe.
Closing thoughts is, first of all, I think it was a great show. I really enjoyed it. And one thing that stuck out to me just now, Richard, is you're right. We are going there not to do a hit job, so to speak, but it really is to expose the darkness, do our research, to actually be those investigators, to go and investigate for the sole purpose of helping people that are lost right now, having compassion on what's going on, to put into perspective of how this is all and why this is happening, and hopefully to be able to deliver a documentary that is not so much in your face, this is the way it is and that's it. No. Our approach and the way we've decided we're going to approach this, I believe, is going to reach the heart of people and penetrate in a way that no shows or documentaries are able to do it, because they still go into that biased approach that this is the way it is, this is it, it doesn't matter. No. We are going to shine the light and leave you with the thoughts to draw your own conclusions, because at the end of the day, you're still going to have to draw your own conclusion as to what's going on. But at least I know after they have watched the documentary that they will have been given so much information that it's totally up to them what they want to do with it once they get it. But they can't say they never received it. And that's what I believe is going to be happening.
There you go. Nathan, thank you for taking the time out and coming on short notice. And I look forward to hearing more about what you're doing and bringing you on again before we get to Atchison. We're counting down 3 months. This is the 21st, 3 months from today is the solar eclipse. So it's counting down, folks. If you want to support us, you want to be a part of this, we need your help. We need your support. And go to thedeepdarkness.com and write to us. And if you want to be a part of aerial support, you can do that. But it's getting really dark out there. No, it's not getting. It is really dark out there. And we're going to shine the light. We're going to shine it in a way that, like my brother and fellow teammate said, you won't have any more excuses. You'll have to decide for yourself. So, Nathan, thank you for coming on. Give Hannah our regards, and we'll talk to you soon, brother.
Absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity.
All righty. Night. We'll see you soon.
Ciao. All right.
Well, folks, that's it. We went over. Hope you enjoyed it. If you have any comments, go to supernaturalresponse.net, firefalltalkradio.com. But this is who we are. This is what we do. We shine the light. We expose the darkness. We've been doing it as SRT since 2007, as Reflections in the Dark since 2010, and we're going to keep doing it until the Lord comes back. I'm Richard Grant on behalf of Joseph Tron and SRT. This has been Reflections in the Dark on Firefall Talk Radio.